This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Hi, I'm Tim Bray, and this is Small Things That Matter, the show about little things that most people overlook, the quiet ideas, small actions, and the unexpected stories that make people and communities better. So today I'm talking with Selwyn Cook. So welcome, Selwyn.
Thank you, Tim. Welcome.
I want to start here. You're running 18 service stations, 200 staff, constant turnover. Then one day in the middle of a storm, someone climbs the stairs to your office. He's on crutches, soaked, exhausted, rings the doorbell with his chin and asks you for a job. What's going on with that staff?
Well, that's a great story to start with, Tim, and I remember it as if it was yesterday. I speak about it being one of those rare Waikato days where we had the rain horizontal and the leaves blowing around, and it's just a really unpleasant day. And this job seeker, Chris, had made his way from the transport centre down in the middle of Hamilton to our service station at the top end of Anglesey Street. He spoke to the counter staff and wanted to speak to me, and they pointed him to the stairs at the end of the building, which took us up to our office. It was an older building, so accessibility considerations weren't even thought of back then, and poor old Chris, in spite of his health conditions and his disabilities, he was soaked to the skin and he just looked like a drowned rat. But he made his way up the stairs and rang the doorbell with his chin, as you said, because he was just so exhausted from his journey. I went down and opened the door, and there was Chris with his infectious personality wanting a job. Now, I formed in the back of my head while he was busy explaining this and his desire to work in my business, I was forming his dismissal, because surely Chris had rung the wrong doorbell. Our business was much too busy, much too complex, health and safety, all of those chestnuts that just simply meant to me at the time that this was not a employment opportunity that disabled people could consider. And when I found the chance to share that with Chris, in the politest way, of course, Chris said, "Well, that's all very well, Mr. Cook, but I'd still like to work for you, and I'd love 5 minutes of your time to tell you why." Not knowing what to do in that situation, I invited Chris in for 5 minutes.
So in saying that, had you already, was it a no and just being polite for that 5 minutes, or was it a, okay, so you're a bit persistent?
Well, before he came into the building, my default and biases were that this was not an employment opportunity for disabled people. Out on the forecourt, busy forecourts, busy queues at counters, lines of people, all of these things. I was an employer who, without consciously thinking about it, had formed a view that my business was not right for disabled people. And little did I know up to this point that I was eliminating, by my biases, 24% of the population that could have worked for me and wanted to work for me and would have been great staff. So Chris was invited in, and we sat and we shared the opportunity for him to explain a little bit more around his desire to work. So those 5 minutes actually turned into 8 years.
Oh, wow. So what actually did he say in those 5 minutes? Was there some polished pitch? Was there just something he said that flicked that switch?
What he was real. And he didn't have a prepared pitch. He didn't have a CV. He hadn't had employment opportunities of any note that would allow him to come with any credentials. But he had an enthusiastic, infectious personality and a very keen and obvious desire to work. And it got to me. I began to think that who was I in dismissing Chris and people like Chris so flippantly when they rang the bell without hearing what they had to say.
That's huge. That's a massive shift in.
Well,
that
was only the beginning. Mm. And we talked about in a corporate way, we talked about how we wanted people to have Z factor, which was a personality that got on with people.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't need the experience and qualifications of them working in a service station previously. In fact, my arrogance said that was a disadvantage because I'd have to knock all that previous training and experience they had out of them because we were so much more customer focused and better than that. But anyway, Chris convinced me that that I should give him a chance because of the way I know he would delight customers. And so that was the beginning of his 8-year employment with us. He did everything that we expected of our customer service staff. And that included the housekeeping, that included the stocking, it included the cleaning of the toilets, it included the delighting of our customers, of which Chris did very well. In spite of his health and disability issues and the fact that he used crutches to get around, he would engage with the customers at a level that was refreshingly different.
Okay, because I was going to actually ask you that. As an employer, a lot of people will say, well, accommodations, I don't have the time to, or the support, I'm going to be employing two people to employ this one person. Or did you find that the case, or was that something?
No, I found the opposite the case. And, and I get that. I get that thinking. And often that just comes from a preconception that is what you'll be dealing with rather than the reality of the situation. If you flick that viewpoint around and use Chris's example, of which there were many others, their enthusiasm, their desire and the keenness to get employment, open employment, where they could prove themselves, be part of something, earn an income, all the things that everybody wants to do and be, then they knew they had to bust through some of these biases that other people and their employer and the hiring manager, i.e. me, would have. And it didn't take long in my case, which was great, because I thought, wow, Chris was great. I saw him out there on the forecourt on his crutches with the bonnet resting on his head as he checked oil and water.
I can just imagine. I can just imagine that. Crutches out the side and everything else.
Exactly. And one day, on another one of those rare Waikato days when the rain was horizontal coming in under the forecourt, Chris was out there struggling with an umbrella as he was trying to help a lady customer back into her car, which I just thought was just, that was Chris. Mm. Where many of the teams that worked for us would use those opportunities, particularly on those days, just to sit on the stool behind the counter.
Mm. Oh, I've seen plenty of those before that, as well, too.
Well, that wasn't, that definitely wasn't Chris. Mm. I think the thing that really got me so very early on, and this was a key point in the change of my attitude, is that Chris became the go-to guy. So not only was he great at his job, when another staff member phoned in with perhaps some itis like Monday morning itis or man flu or Friday afternoon itis or you can stick your job boss itis or whatever it was, then Chris would often get the call and say, can you come on in? And more often than not, much more often than not, he was able to hop on the bus, take the bus to Te Rapa, walk up to the station, again on his crutches, of course, and fulfill an 8 to 10 hour shift because someone else had man flu.
That's amazing. That desire, I guess, that he really wanted to work, that loyalty, that reliability. I mentioned earlier on about the turnover you're facing at the time. How did that impact it? Was it more than just Chris in terms of that taking on disabled people, or is it just Chris was the anomaly in that?
No, Chris was the catalyst, I guess, for my thinking. And I remember early on in the piece, my wife and I sat down and I guess in summary were questioning ourselves on what type of employers we had been. Mm. And to us, it was always important to be good people, and we wanted to be good employers. Mm. And we had, as you said, at the peak of our business, 200 staff across the Waikato and into Rotorua. We needed to and wanted to, of course, to treat them well as we could. And Chris, but we still had this turnover of staff. And as I said, Chris ended up staying with us for 8 years, which was very, very long service. Mm-hmm. In fact, he passed away at 8 years while he was still on our payroll of his health and disability issues. So, but he was 8 years working for us, which was an unheard of tenure for the service station industry. And we accepted in our efforts to be a good employer that we were a stepping stone employment opportunity. A lot of people would leave school and want a gap year, or they were saving up for their OE, or all sorts of things would drive them to work in our business or a service station. And, you know, we were there to support them on their journey while they worked for us. But it was still a big deal. And with up to 50%, like 100 of our staff leaving every year, that was a big cost and a big turnover. But when my wife and I actually sat down and talked about who we had been in, as employers, and how we had discounted those from the disabled community, it flicked a switch. And we then made a stand that we were going to target the disability community as a source of recruitment.
That's actually not goes way beyond this moral, hey, we want to be a good people, a good good employers, to being quite smart and strategic about this decision that maybe others aren't.
Well, that's certainly how I looked at it in part. Mm. First of all, we wanted to correct the wrong that we had been doing. And we got to know people as people and their stories and the barriers and the hurdles that they had experienced through their employment journeys and job searching. And I could spend many more than the time we've got allocated now, Tim, to share with you all those stories. You know, it was heartbreaking when you considered what great people they were, and they were coming across employment barriers simply because they had an impairment. And my view is we all have barriers in life in one way, shape or form challenge us to live a life that we want. So we all live with some barriers. So we went out and targeted the disability community, but it soon became evident that that was improving the bottom line was being improved by our decision to employ disabled people. And that is something that I've still continued to this day to like to share. Why did it employ? It was because of that tenure, that turnover of staff. Mm-hmm. The turnover of staff is a huge cost to business. It's not only just the exiting and onboarding of new staff, but all those hidden costs of training and sending them off for fire extinguisher training and first aid course, all of those things, uniforms, but also the disruption to the teams, and even back then the frustration to the customers that high turnover had. I mean, if you're going to give away a day's pay to have your tank filled with petrol, then it'd be nice to be able to know the person who's taking your money.
No, absolutely. And I guess as the customers, they've always got a choice. There's another service station up the road as well.
That's right.
So why choose yours?
Yeah, well, we found many appreciated the opportunities that we were giving people. And so our customers seemed to appreciate the stand that we were taking, which did become obvious because we hired so many disabled people. But it wasn't a nice thing to do. I mean, maybe in a way you could say it was a nice thing to do, but from a business point of view, it was smart. Mm. And we our turnover dropped considerably, staff turnover.
Oh, that's fantastic. When did you find it was more than just Chris? So a lot of people, employers anyway, would be saying that, well, you've just got lucky with having Chris affect your personality. This deliberately targeting a sector or disabled people as a business strategy. How many Chris's are out there compared to like the rest of the job seeker pool? Not everyone's going to be that infectious personality. Mm. Not everyone's going to be that, have that heart for customer service or provide those over the top moments like Chris did.
Well, tell me the demographic that does have it by default, because
I don't think anyone.
I never found it.
No, for sure.
And I think, you know, within all our staff teams, And just simply around the working with people, there are those who are, you know, committed, and those you probably think, you know, I wish they had rung the doorbell next door.
Yes.
But that was reduced with the those that seem to come with disability. And the reason that was obvious was because they were so keen and so eager to have an employment opportunity, which they had found so difficult to get in the past. And with that keenness and enthusiasm, you know, brought a work ethic that was a little bit different to many. So, you know, I think if you think about the opportunities that aren't there for many people with disability, health or impairments, then if you think about how difficult it is for them to get opportunities like employment or travel or accommodation and things like that, then when they get it, you can also appreciate how much value that brings to them and how they want to protect what they now have. So we found, you know, again, I'm probably spinning off on a tangent, our health and safety officer for one of our largest stations in our business came to us through Blind and Low Vision New Zealand. And he was a gentleman of low vision who was our health and safety officer, because he saw things that I never saw. And I thought I was the man. Wow. Here I was operating 18 service station, did it for 27 years. And here was this guy who came into my business with low vision, who pointed out a health and safety consideration that I escalated to Z Energy, who fed back to me, that is a valuable insight for our network.
Wow.
And because they live managing risk every step of their day. And that is how he saw something in our business that I hadn't seen, because, you know, if you look at ACC's records, it's the Selwyns who fall off the ladder cleaning the gutter because I think I can lean that little bit more and I can, you know, get that little next step higher.
I'm just picturing the last time I was up on the gutters, actually, last weekend. And yes, I didn't fall off, but
yeah
I was pretty close.
Well, that's right. But many disabled people, they know their limitations and they manage accordingly. And they manage their disability, manage their risk on a moment-to-moment basis. And some of that was just absolute gold. So, you know, to answer your question, most of the people we employed who identified with disability were good staff, if not great staff.
That's actually a really interesting point you just brought up there, because I hadn't thought of it that way where, and my, I guess that's coming into my own bias, where I would look at someone and say, well, this is what they're capable of, where who is the best person to decide what they're capable of, and so really themselves is testing their own limits as opposed to myself putting my own prejudged, probably worst case scenario, limits on them.
I think one of the biggest problems I had as an employer was I didn't know how I was thinking. It wasn't a conscious bias, it was an unconscious bias.
Yeah.
And it took Chris to open my eyes and start my thinking around that. And, you know, we had been employers for over a decade at this stage and had never thought about the talent pool that sits within the disability community. And it's a message I still to this day love to share with employers when I can, is that when the job matches right, then you have long-serving, loyal, productive staff that may not be the case with others who don't identify with disability.
No, absolutely. And on the other side, the people you do employ, and I know we've both worked in this kind of the sector before, an employment sector before, seeing the impact on their lives is pretty huge, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, you know, people, you know, we've had people in who've managed to get a deposit and get a house. You know, these are people who live, you know, live with impairments on a day, you know, moment by moment basis, and by giving them employment opportunities, they are able to get ahead like all of us want to do in life.
So this being kind of, I guess, opening my eyes, and I knew it as well, but talking to you now, there's that sense that I will look at people differently, especially with people with disabilities, impairments, differently, because not because of my own prejudices or my own biases, but because of what they could potentially bring and what they could potentially do for themselves, but also for myself and our business as well too. In terms of other employers, what do you think they're missing out on by judging too fast? Because everyone at some point, or every employer at some point, has that 5 minutes, has that ring at the door and the pouring rain, probably the most inconvenient time. We've all had it, and it's so easy to go, I'm going to rather make myself a coffee. I'd rather sit at my desk, be warm, than entertaining someone that I've already prejudged as a no, for instance. How do you think they miss out? And, you know, if there was a word that you would give an employer who is facing that situation or going to be facing that situation next week, what would it be?
Well, you're putting me on the spot there, Tim, and the word that is occurring to me is to pause. So prior to forming those unbiased views or even biased views that you have, is to take the opportunity to pause and think about the opportunity with the person that you are now speaking to. Chris could have turned around and said, oh, well, thanks, Mr. Cook, and gone. But he said, that's all very well, Mr. Cook. I'd still like to work for you, and I'd like 5 minutes of your time. That forced me to pause and to think about again what he was offering. And I just, it was so powerful just only through his personality that was, you know, that was wonderful. The opportunities and even a little bit of the COVID era gave employers the chance to reconsider some of the way they do things.
No, absolutely.
And I know, you know, we just need to look at remote video meetings and things like that. That sort of leapfrogged because of that COVID era. But also adapting employment agreements and having workplace jobs that now are tailored to not necessarily suit people, because people do turn over, but are tailored to suit the role. And often you will find that there is a great match when you start looking and building a team to fill some of those roles, and when you're able to pause and consider some of the considerations that people may have. And if I'm not making that clear, it's around, you know, you have some people who may not be able to do an 8-hour day, or who could, you know, appreciate working from home for some of the working week. Now we're able to think about those opportunities a bit more, then that really helps the job match be great. And statistically, not that I'm a statistics guy, but this is something for employers to lock on to. When the job matches right, disabled people stay in their employment up to 6 times longer.
Wow, that's huge.
Than the so-called non-disabled, or as I like to call, the temporarily able. And that's easy to quantify as well, because, you again, it's coming back to the barriers that they face to get jobs, so they're more enthusiastic and excited and wanting to keep that employment. But also, in this world, it's a little bit different right at the moment, but the opportunities for non-disabled people to travel, to go to other countries, I mean, we're even, you know, being picked on over here, come over and work in Australia, nursing, police, and, you know. The opportunities for people to pack up and travel, or to move down the road to another employer who is looking for, you know, a staff member as well, who and may just induce you a little bit more. But those opportunities have come to disabled people. So when the job matches right, they're sticking around 6 times longer, and that's gold.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And conversely, when you were looking at the disabled person, it's the thing that shines through is a bit of persistence as well too. It's not a free ride. It's not by any means easy, but it's definitely worth sticking at too. Absolutely. And holding on once you've got it.
Exactly. And I would never advocate that anybody gets employed because of their disability. That's not what we're around.
Yeah.
But it's about considering the employment of a person who has a disability or faulting, as I used to do, to not consider them because they had a disability.
And that's great. That's a really good balanced view to have, isn't it? It's smart, but it's empathetic. It's showing that there's a real heart for people there, which is the essence of really service, isn't it? Not just customers, but to colleagues, to the rest of your team, everywhere. So, Sal, that was really interesting. What's next? You've gone from this 18 service stations, 200 staff. You mentioned you've retired now. It doesn't sound like you've retired now somehow.
Well, it doesn't feel like I've retired in many ways, but I guess you've just got to figure out what that means. The time in our service station business came to an end. My wife took ill, and it was all hands on deck to try and save her, of which we weren't successful. And so that was a time when we moved out of the business. I was fortunate enough to be asked by Workbridge if I could share my employer's story. And so I was engaged with them for a while as their employer ambassador and worked with some great businesses to, again, to try and build their disability confidence around employment. I then, during the COVID era, decided to put my money where my mouth was and actually go out and form a job seeker model to try and support job seekers who were still coming across these barriers. And thanks to the backing by the Ministry of Social Development, who were able to fund me to do that and keep food on my table, I was able to explore a new approach of supporting job seekers. And that was valuable work as well. But then it came that time when time to hang up the pump and hang up what I was doing particularly having, lost my wife to cancer, the thought of retirement, of being something we should embrace if we're fortunate enough to get here, is something that became pretty important to me. So that's what I'm trying to embrace now, but I'm still trying to figure it out, I assure you.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you, Sean. So I've got here one moment at the door, 5 minutes that you nearly didn't give. Become 8 years, a lower turnover, stronger business, and a completely different way of hiring. Thank you so much for coming on today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity, Tim.
Join me again for another conversation next week, and you can listen to any past episodes on your favourite podcasting platform. I'm Tim Bray, and this is Small Things That Matter.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.